Can I ask you, Kate, why you would want to meet Eileen?
I thought Eileen was a very decent lady. They conducted themselves very, very decently and well in court. They were dignified, as was myself, and I just thought they were just like-minded people like myself.
She's on the line, Kate. Would you like to say hello to her?
Yes, surely. Hello, Mrs. McConville. Eileen?
Hello, Mrs. Carroll.
How are you?
Not too bad, thanks.
That's good.
What would you like to say to each other? Eileen, what would you say to Kate?
That I'm very, very sorry. You know what happened. I'm really sorry. But I just wanted to know that Bren didn't do it. He really didn't do it. And I wouldn't be here if he did.
Well, I'm sorry for your
I know you,
loss
you,
of your son. I really am. But as I say, I can't comment on it. It was just gone on the evidence that was found, Brendan's clothes and whatever. And, I mean, I'm not the judge, and I can't speak for a judge. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would love to say, yes, your son didn't do it. If he didn't, Eileen, could you get the people involved and let him say who did kill Steve? Because I don't want Steve's murderer to be walking out free.
No, I know you wouldn't, and I'd be the same, too.
Yes, exactly. So if you could help in any way, please trust the police. Things have changed, and you can trust the police, but, you know, you need to be very careful of the terrorists who would maybe, you know, retaliate to what you're doing or saying.
I know.
Eileen, once again, I don't feel it's appropriate to talk on this radio program about, you know, what a court has decided.
Yes.
With all of the evidence in front of them. But do you mind expressing to Kate how you feel about what she's gone through and the loss of her husband?
Yes, I know exactly what she's going through.
Would you like to speak to her directly?
Yes, Kate, I know exactly what you're going through. We have been through all that ourselves.
Yeah. I've just realised that you've lost a brother. I didn't realise that until someone told me this morning. But I'm sorry for your loss as well. But I think the loss of a husband is absolutely dreadful. Your partner, you know.
I know that. I know it is.
I know. I relied on him so much, and he was such a lovely person. I mean, I would say if Brendan and the other guys had have known him, that Steve would have been alive today.
Well, Brendan told me many a time that he was really sorry for you and for the loss of your husband, but that he didn't do it.
Yeah.
That he's sitting in jail and that no one was sorry for him, and yet he didn't do it. Mm. He said that to me many times.
Kate, do you think, Kate Carroll, that there is a that there is an impact beyond your individual case in you meeting what is the mother of your husband's killer?
Well, as I've always said, I would speak to anybody. I don't give out empty gestures. I act on what I say I'll do. And I would have no problem meeting with anyone to talk about this. And I think it's more or less, it's part of the healing process for me anyway, because I would just like to know. There's things I need to know. There's things I'm sure Mrs. McComb or Eileen wants to know. And I mean, I'm quite happy to answer her questions, and if she wants to ask me anything, then, you know, I'll happily answer hers. But yes, I think that if we all sat down and did talk about this, we maybe could get further. You know, this process, this peace process may sort of gather some, as I say, momentum, and we could run with it.
We've been talking a lot on this programme about a shared future and about reconciliation and about victims and the healing process,
yeah,
as you describe it, Kate. What difference did it make to you? Because you talked about some people when you were on the Nolan television show.
Yes.
You talked about some people laughing at you.
Yes, that's correct.
And mocking you.
Yeah.
When you were having to hear the evidence about your husband's death.
About how his head was shattered and how the bullet had, you know, fractured his skull and went through his brain and then out of his ear.
And they laughed at you when that happened? When you were
They were nudging each other and smirking at each other, which I thought was not, you know, appropriate.
Yeah.
But
Can I ask you what difference it made to you that Eileen behaved with dignity? What difference did that make?
Well, it meant a lot to me because I just thought there's one side, you know, laughing and jeering and, you know, poking comments and what are they looking at? And, you know, they weren't. They sat like myself, probably embarrassed, you know, that this is happening to them. No one wants to make little of anybody. I would never make little of anyone. I believe that life is for living and we should live it. And you should never, ever look down your nose at anybody. As my mother and father used to say, there but for the grace of God go I. And I'm a great believer in that.
And my father and mother used to cross off calendar dates with a magic marker. And the longer the days got, the more he just looked at me and said, I don't know.
They just wanted him back home?
He said, I don't know what the chances are. I'm saying, Dad, there's a chance. It's possible. I arrived at my father's house that morning with the captain. It was printed in a newspaper. They couldn't accept it because they were identifying by raincoats. I had to go back 3 hours later with the captain and tell them it's a fact. He's passed on. And it's the only time I ever saw my father cry. The only time. It's unbelievable. And you can't get away from it. You can't move away from it. You can't run away from it. You have to deal with it. And it's a real disaster.
Clifford, it's you know, the thing for me to do as a broadcaster is keep a little bit of distance, but I don't want to. I just want to put my arm around you, okay? I really, really do. Are you okay? And what your dad had to hold on to, and what you've been able to hold on to. Is this young man, your brother, who I see in front of me here, who you've described so proudly, you know what he stood for, and you're showing me a picture of him here with this uniform on, and that can't ever be taken away from you.
Well, my son, who graduated CW Post and could do anything he wants, decided to become a firefighter. He's been a firefighter for 4 years, and he is taking my brother's place in the same firehouse, the same engine, and the same bed.
Your son?
Yes, 27 years old, Christopher Russell. And he's there today, and he's on duty.
Now?
Right now.
My God, did you want him to do it?
You gotta do what you gotta do. Maybe that's his way of dealing with it. I can't explain to you what my way of dealing with it is. Obviously, I can't. But he's made a decision. And he's right in the heart of it.
As we think about today, and I asked this question at the beginning, and obviously now we've heard your story, it takes on a whole new perspective. You're sitting down there today, and the world is watching. As your brother and the others are honored.
Correct. This tragedy has touched the entire globe. No doubt about it. Like I said, I can't go anywhere, so I have to figure out how to confront it. Everybody's eyes have been glued to some form of media or radio today in apprehension of all getting over it. Everybody's trying to get past it. most of them don't even know it. You don't know it. It's in there. And hopefully some people found a path that will take them to a better place. I always say I see the dark side now. I used to always see the daylight. I only see the negative, and I see the dark. Sometimes I see twilight, but I never see daylight.
My mum's oncologist, when I went to see her on the Wednesday morning to beg her to try and get mum to the city, because the admissions ward she was in was truly awful, she couldn't access the bloods that had been taken in A&E in the Royal the night before either. I still don't know what those bloods said. I still don't know what they said. Would it have indicated that mum was on her, you know, was about to give herself over to disease? Would have indicated that there was something that could be done? I don't even know what she died of. No one even spoke to me after she died. No idea if it was cardiac arrest, if it was respiratory arrest, as if it was a result of her disease. I haven't a clue.
Oh, gross, Shane. I'm so, so sorry that you've been treated like this. I genuinely am. I'm actually, you know, here's the score today. Edwin Poots, Health Minister. You listening to this?
The other thing, Stephen, to be honest, that's quite difficult is that I had cared for a relative of cancer before, and my aunt cares for my grandfather full time. So you had two very savvy, medically savvy, very aware people in that A&E who could work out quickly who the nurse to be talking to was, who the bed manager was. You know, any sphere of influence that we could have had, we tried to work it that night, and we got nowhere. So the really scary thing I actually found when I was discussing this with a friend of mine, girls same age, but two healthy parents, is that if she ended up in the same situation, she would end up even worse off than I was. Because, you know, at least I understood a certain amount of what was going on. I could put pressure in the right places. She wouldn't even know where to start. The thing that is hardest to deal with is the unfairness. I mean, I did care for my mum since she was diagnosed as ill, and to give her such an undignified death and to leave me with such a sense of regret is unfair. That's the main emotion that you get left with. My mum put her trust in me. She didn't really trust the service, but she trusted me. And I put my trust in the service in taking her to A&E that night. And quite honestly, if I could do it again, I would keep her at home. I would keep her at home. Nothing good came of it, and all it meant was she was trapped in the Royal.
Trapped in the Royal. A place that's supposed to be a place of sanctuary.
Well, if you could see this admissions ward, it's cramped, it's dirty. There's no side rooms. When she died, she lay on a ward for 4 hours. No doctors spoke to us. To be honest, her mum was really deteriorating that morning, and my aunt was petitioning them to try and get the city to get her over or try and get an oncologist to come and see her. It emerges then, miraculously, that there is an oncologist who works in the Royal and has always done and liaises with the city, and she'll be down. And she appeared about 40 minutes after mum had died. So to find out that she was there when I'd been running between the Royal and the city the day before trying to get doctors to, you know, get the impetus to get her moved. And you find out that there was somebody in the same building who could have assessed her, but it just didn't flag up on anyone's radar quick enough to happen. So, yeah, we feel very let down, and I'm carrying, and I think my aunt is too, a deep sense of guilt for... You know, we knew she was very ill. We knew that she might only have, at max, a year of life left. But to let it be so undignified when we knew it was coming is really difficult.
I don't know you, obviously. And, you know, I'm talking to you for the first time as all the listeners to this programme are hearing you for the first time. But I can tell you this. What is coming across today, Roisin, is a very loving daughter who fought and fought to try to get her mother the very best care.
But it can come out of the blue. I mean, like I say, this last bout, everything was absolutely fine, and touch wood, I hadn't had a bout since a very, very bad one about 7 or 8 years ago, whereby I was in bed for a month, and I did, you know, I don't know whether attempted suicide is the right thing, but I drove out into the countryside. My phone was ringing because the police had been notified at that point that I was poorly. My mum was calling. I listened to her voice in her voicemail and just came home and I just broke down and I just went back to bed for about another 3 weeks.
What stopped you?
My mum, my daughter. I've got a beautiful 10-year-old daughter that was obviously only two or three then. But my mum is 81. She's, you know, been through the war. She's been through bringing up a young mixed-race boy on her own. She's been there for me. And I just thought to myself, I'm going to afford myself time here, even if it's 30 seconds, to not do this. I mean, at this time last year, it was quite poignant, really. A very close friend of mine that had struggled with mental health issues for 10 years. We found him, he hung himself. And it's just, there's no need, Stephen. I mean, in 2011, particularly for young men that always find such issues difficult to talk about, there's no need. For the sake of picking up a phone, we could save lives, we could get people through bouts of depression.
But what is scary here, Stan, is that split decision that you made, that split second decision that you made, because you got yourself the means to do it and you travelled alone to do it.
And don't believe you me, I mean, it's quite scary, but at the time, it was a beautiful sunny morning, it was probably about 7 o'clock in the morning, is that you do, I cannot stress enough, and for people that have had mental health issues, they understand, and I've engaged with a lot recently, a lot of people think, well, how selfish would that be? But it's not a case that your mind is racing at a million miles an hour into particularly dark places. And if you can't live the life that you want to live, you get up, you wash, you engage with people, you work, you look forward to doing things. That darkness that broods over you for a month is enough. And sometimes when it happens for a few days, for people to take their own lives. And I just ask people genuinely now that might be feeling very, very low and very, very vulnerable and have gone through all the symptoms that I've talked about. Pick up the phone. Even if you talk to the Samaritans, there'll be somebody there that won't be judgmental. Even if you pick up the phone and talk to a friend, is that a bounce of depression, like the sun comes up and the sun goes down, you will come through it.
Right throughout this whole programme today, many, many of you have been calling us, and please continue to leave your views on our Twitter at Stephen Nolan, on our Facebook site, facebook.com/The Nolan Show. And during the programme today, I know that Frank's family have been listening because they've phoned us to tell us. One of his sons, Aidan, has contacted us. Morning to you, Aidan.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you doing?
You've been listening today.
Yeah, I've been listening. We sat with my son, Aidan Pierce, Ashley and Saoirse, the whole family, Di. We've all been here with my mum. We're trying to help my mum through this as well. I know it's fantastic because we're just sitting in the two spectrums of it, from my mum upstairs trying to sort of come to terms and listen to all the fantastic tributes from my dad, you know. It's a surreal time, I suppose. Is that what they say these days? It's very difficult. Very difficult, but it's fantastic to hear what people are saying about him. It's just really, really heartwarming, you know. It brings it home to us. And then his family, you always just play the guy that's in front of you. It was just our, it was just Da. He's our Da, and that was it. He wasn't Frank at home. When he came back home, he also had to come back down to reality with us, because we were his, maybe not only his biggest critics, but was sort of he couldn't pull any punches at home because he was just our dad, you know.
Can we leave our last tribute to Frank today coming from you, Aidan? What would you say with your father?
Legend, fantastic. But from his dad, from early days in Belfast and Strathaven Street, around the dock area, Sailor Town, little half bap. That's where it all started from. The hard work, the effort, the drive of the man, the passion, you know. It was just absolutely awesome. I sent him a text, actually. He tried to send me a text. He couldn't never come to terms with text. And I sent him one back, and it just said at the end of it, "The boy from Sailor Town done well." And that's what he did. He done well. He's a fantastic man. Awesome.
Aidan, we're going to put this programme on a special podcast, and hopefully it'll go around the UK.
Uh-huh.
And I hope that this programme has played just a small part in conveying to you and your family.
Fantastic. Yeah, we've just been...
How important people feel your father was.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fantastic. And we're bringing him home.